You are listening to The Christian Commute, a commute-length podcast about Christian apologetics, theology, and other matters of Christian interest. Here is your host, Seth Dunn.
It is Monday, July 9th. This is The Christian Commute. You're riding with me straight home on this muggy day. I have a full show today. People have been quite faithful in writing in to the inbox. And I'll get to that show as soon as I navigate myself out of hourly parking. I got to work at 8:15 today, which means that all the manager parking spaces were gone. So I had to park in the back. So that's my first world problem for today. Other than, you know, it being so hot and my air conditioner not being cool yet. All right, I'm out of the labyrinth. I'm free. Today's show topic is called Pastoral Turnover. Pastoral Turnover. And I think I might kind of connect it to Friday's show topic as far as making it similar. And I didn't plan to. In fact, this show topic is one of them that didn't come from my list. It just came to me today. Uh-oh, here is a tractor trailer stuck in a ditch in front of me. And here is the tractor trailer tow truck that's come to get it out. I'm going to go around them anyway. From time to time, I see this happen. I work in an industrial section of town, and just, you know, every once in a while you'll find a tractor trailer stuck in a ditch. And I feel that that's going to get more prominent, or prevalent, I should say prevalent. I don't know if you guys know this, but the trucking industry right now is booming. They can't find enough truckers. There's this law called E-Logs, and I think it's from the Department of Transportation or something like that, where truckers have to log how many hours they drive, and they can't drive as many hours as they used to. So here's an example. 20 years ago, a trucker would have drove a 16-hour day, and he would have took those little honeybee pills that you buy from the gas station, the uppers, and he'd just drive. And now they won't let you do that. You have to log your mileage and time. So it takes more days, or at least more people, more drivers, for things to get places. Plus, the economy is doing really well, so more stuff is getting shipped, and they need more people to do it. So don't be surprised if you see a lessening in the skill of truck drivers, because we need more of them. There are not enough truck drivers in America right now. We just hired a truck driver. It took weeks just to get one. So that's, I guess I could have used that for garbage time. I should have saved that one up. Anyway, let's get right to the Bible chapter review. Today's Bible chapter review, oh, by the way, I do have a question in the inbox. Today's Bible chapter review comes from Colossians 3, verses 3 through 4. Colossians 3, verses 3 through 4. So you remember in verses 1 and 2, Paul tells us, set your minds on the things above, which is where Christ is. Now, following up on that, set your minds on things above, on Christ, for you have died and your life is hidden with Christ in God. And the implication here is that you're a new creation because you've died to your old self and you've been raised to and with Christ. And not only are you a new creation, you have a new identification, not with the kingdom of this world, but with the kingdom of heaven. And your life is hidden in the place above with Christ, in God. For you have died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God, where Christ, who is, oh, I'm sorry, when Christ, who is our life, is revealed, then you will also be revealed with Him in glory. Implication there. There's not glory to be had here
from following the earthly philosophies and decrees of men. If you focus in living your life in accordance with these dubious principles of vain earthly philosophy, and you try to find your glory there, you'll be without glory. Because your glory, or you are eventually to share in Christ's glory when He reveals Himself from heaven. Right? You're going to be revealed with Him in glory from above. Why are you focused on what is below? Now let's go to the inbox. Do you have a question about Christian apologetics or theology? You can write in to SethDunn88@gmail.com. SethDunn88@gmail.com. The Christian Commute is your theological roadside assistance. Send in your questions about theology, apologetics. Send in your show topic suggestions. Keep them short and tell me where you're from. Unlike Bruce. Bruce writes in from parts unknown. Bruce is a premillennialist. So am I. And Bruce's question is, do people who spend the majority of their time analyzing news stories over and against prophecy turn their focus from Christ? In other words, are these people wasting their time? There is the old saying, don't be so heavenly minded that you're of no earthly good. I've never liked that saying, because we are supposed to be heavenly minded, because we're supposed to be ambassadors here on earth, and our kingdom is in heaven, just like we talked about, thinking about the things above. So this is just an interesting question in relation to what we just talked about. But maybe you know some people like this. This is always kind of difficult on the Christian Commute, because Bruce's friends may not be a representative sample of everybody. Maybe Bruce knows a bunch of people preoccupied with eschatology. I don't. I don't know a single person who spends a majority of his time analyzing news stories over and against prophecy. So what's an example of this? Let's say that there is a meeting in Israel to discuss the governing of the different parts of Jerusalem. I'm not saying that's a real news story. I'm saying that could be a real news story. And then somebody sees it and says, oh my gosh, the Dome of the Rock Mosque is in Jerusalem, and it's the location of where Abraham sacrificed Isaac, and it's the location of the original temple, and the temple has to be rebuilt before Jesus can come. But right now, there's a mosque on the site, so Jesus can't come back. But if the Jews and the Muslims are negotiating who's going to govern that part of Jerusalem, if the Jews take it back, they could tear down the Dome of the Rock Mosque and build the temple, and then Jesus could come back. This is a sign of the times. So that's an example. People who look at these news stories and say, what prophetic impact could this have? If you're familiar with a guy named Jimmy DeYoung, he went to Tennessee Temple. I don't know if he still does, but he at least used to have a radio program or podcast on the Worldview Weekend Network of podcasts with Brandon House. And I think his business is doing Israel tours with churches, but he'll also come to churches in the United States, and I think he spends a lot of time in Jerusalem, but he'll also do guest preaching at churches in the United States and do something called like a prophecy update, where he'll look at the year's news and say, you know, how does this relate? How do these news stories, how can they possibly speak to end times prophecy? So I know there are people who get all concerned with that. Bruce, I don't know anybody who just sits around, looks at the news all day, and thinks, how does this relate to prophecy? But you say you know these people. I want to tell you this. If anybody is so obsessed about any little facet of news that they don't evangelize or spend time with their family or go to work or do all these things, or sleep enough for that matter, or they basically don't live a well-balanced life because they're obsessed with something, then that probably is turning their focus away from Christ in a Christian life. So you don't need to have a healthy, an unhealthy obsession with anything. But let's talk about people who get all obsessed with prophecy. Yeah, Bruce, I think that would be a waste of time, and I think it would be foolish. Let me bring up an example. Anybody remember Four Blood Moons by John Hagee? And, oh dear. Actually, Four Blood Moons produced one of my favorite videos ever. And I think I've talked about it before. But John Hagee is this... I'll call him a preacher. He's this preacher in Texas who gets a lot of money from Zionists. He's this ultra-Israel supporter. By his lifestyle, he's actually not qualified to be a pastor if you look into his past. But he's one of these TBN types who's not as overtly heretical as, say, Kenneth Copeland or Benny Hinn, but you can toss him in with them. And he's always talking about prophecy in Israel, Israel this, Israel that. And he wrote a book called Four Blood Moons because there was an astronomical event, and I can't remember if it was 2 or 3 years ago, where the moon, a full moon, would be colored red due to some phenomenon. And this only happens, you know, every 150 years or something like that. And I think it was, I don't know, 2015, I haven't read the book, was the year where there are going to be four blood moons. You know, in a regular year, you might get one or two blood moons, but you never get four. And four blood moons were going to happen soon. And there was prophetic significance to it because, according to John Hagee, when, you know, the Bible says towards the end, the moon will be turned to blood. And he's saying, yeah, that means the moon's going to be colored red. So he's talking about this apocalyptic event where the moon is turned to blood, like a heavenly body disintegrating into blood. And he's saying, no, that means there's going to be this astronomical event where the moon is red. And we're getting it where it never happens four times. Is it four? It was either four times or five times. And it's going to happen. And every time this has ever happened, something big has happened with the Jews. Something big is going to happen with Israel. So he's like, you just watch out in the news this year. There's going to be terrible things happening in Israel. And it's like, there's always terrible things happening in Israel. Somebody's always getting bombed over there. There's always a situation of unrest between the Israeli democracy and the Islamic fascists who surround them. This is nothing new. I'm going to prophesy this month something bad is going to happen in Israel. I guarantee you that'll come true. Some statistic, there's a 100% chance some terrorist is going to bomb somebody or kidnap somebody in Israel. But this is what John Hagee did. And he sold all these books about four blood moons. I guess it wasn't five. I guess it was four. He sold all these four blood moon books like something's going to happen prophetically in Israel. And he made up all this stuff. It was so important and so big that they had a round table about it on TBN. David Barton was there, because when you need some hack, who do you call? David Barton. And John Hagee's there, and somebody else who I wasn't familiar with. And then Hugh Ross is there. Hugh Ross is an actual astronomer. He's like a professor of astronomy or something. That's what he does for a living, is astronomy. Actually, he's now a Christian apologist. But Hugh Ross specializes in cosmological arguments for theism and Christianity. And they ask Hugh Ross, like, what about these moons, man? And Hugh Ross says, well, you know, in Israel, you can't even see the blood moons. You can't see the red tint. You can see it in America, but... Israelis don't know there's going to be these quote-unquote blood moons. They can't see them. And they pan to John Hagee, who's written a book, and he sold a million of these books. And he goes, oh, I didn't know that. And the host is like trying to throw him a bone. He's like, could it be that's because America has a special role as Israel's protector. And Hagee's like, So, astronomically, and by the way, theologically, Hagee's whole theory of blood moons is blown out of the water. By the way, too late, he's already got the money in the bank from selling his stupid books. And he looks stupid. But all these people who are buying into the blood moon stuff, so they're reading Four Blood Moons, they're buying this book for $10, they're talking about it on the internet, they're looking for signs in the sky, and they're basically wasting their time and money. What's the Bible say? When it comes down to it, bottom line, basic statement about when Jesus is going to come back in the end times. What's the Bible say? Nobody knows when it's going to happen. And if somebody tells you he knows, he's lying. Jesus left us with marching orders. And they weren't to stick your head up in the sky and look for Jesus to come back looking for a bunch of signs. And they weren't to read news reports and try to see how do these relate to these apocalyptic things in Revelation. It could be this, it could be that. It's a bunch of speculation. We're not supposed to be engaging in this vain speculation. We're supposed to be fulfilling the Great Commission. We make disciples and baptize them and teach them to do what Jesus said to do. Remember in Acts 1, men of Jerusalem, why are you sitting here looking at the sky? The same Jesus is going to come back the same way.
Is it this time you're going to restore the kingdom of Israel?
No, why are you standing up looking at the sky, y'all? So we're not supposed to be standing around looking slack-jawed at the sky or reading the latest news report from Israeli Prophecy, Revolution, Golden Eagle, John Hagee, conservative, libertarian, Republican, Democrat, are trying to kill us all, George Soros, Antichrist.com. All right? We're not supposed to be sitting around doing that. So, Bruce, these people, maybe you're exaggerating, Bruce. Maybe they're not spending their majority of time on this. Maybe they're sharing a lot about it on social media. These people who share all this prophecy stuff on social media, and for some reason they're always pre-mill, and it embarrasses me as a pre-mill Christian. I actually wrote an article about this 2 or 3 years ago, and they reprinted it, or they reposted it on Worldview Weekend, come to think of it. I forget the name of the article. It's a Pulpit and Pen, my personal blog, and Worldview Weekend. And I forget, but it was basically the thing of the article was, is you look stupid when you keep sharing all these prophecy things, and you've been sharing things on Facebook about prophecy for 10 years, and you've been listening to the same Jimmy DeYoung sermon for 20 years about prophecy updates, saying it's near, it's happening, it's going to be this is significant, and Jesus still hadn't come back yet, and you just look stupid to lost people. How about you just share Jesus? We're supposed to be in the mood or the mode or the mindset where Jesus could come back at any second. I might not upload this podcast because Jesus comes back. For real, y'all. Jesus could come back at any second. How do we want to be found? Well, Jesus tells us in the parable of the servant, I think it's the parable of the wicked servant who gets left in charge of the lazy servant. We don't want to be found like that guy, being lazy, not expecting the master to return. We want to be found doing what the master told us to do when he comes back. He can come back any second. And we want to be found living a balanced Christian life. So yes, Bruce, these people who look for Jesus to come back all the time and they focus on, could it be, is this a sign? Is this a sign? Is this news a sign? They are taking their focus away from Jesus because Jesus said, here, do all these things. And these things weren't sitting around theorizing about what prophecy could be fulfilled. He's going to fulfill that in his own time. You do your good works that he's preordained for you to do. One of the good works he's preordained for you to do is not sitting around with your vain speculation. So yes, Bruce, I don't know a lot of people like that, but I'm sorry you do. Here's what you should do when I publish this podcast. Share it and then tag their names and say, you guys really need to think about this. Listen to this podcast. Share, share, share. Are you guys sharing the podcast? I know some of you do. I see you sharing it, Sherry. Who else shared it the other day? Was it Darren? I see you sharing the podcast, Darren, but so few people share it that I know the names of the people who do. You guys share the podcast. Enrich other people's lives. Now let's go to today's show topic. You know what? I went way longer with that inbox question than I thought I would.
But it's good because I don't want to do any garbage time today. Let's go to today's show topic. It is called pastoral turnover. It is getting to the point where I'm seeing people that I went to seminary with going to their second or third church. So I have a secular job and always have. But as far as the people, my seminary classmates, I was in the minority as somebody who had a secular job and wasn't on staff at a church. The people you'll find in seminary getting a Master's of Divinity will typically be, 24 years old, 25, maybe even 23, people who are just done with their undergraduate degree and they're youth ministers or some kind of associate pastor somewhere. They're in church in the lower paying jobs, and they're trying to finish their MDiv. Even some senior pastors. Remember I talked about senior pastors, not a real thing, but you guys know what I mean. A lot of times you'll find people who are already in ministry, in seminary, training for the ministry. And then when they graduate and get their master's degree, they're going to get a bigger job, just like I did. When I got my master's degree, I was like, see you later, y'all. I'm going to go get this job over here that pays $10,000, or no, $15,000 a year more. Thanks for your time. Bye-bye. So that's what goes on. And it's getting to be where the guys that I went to seminary with, I see them on Facebook. Oh, it's so sad to have my last day at so-and-so Baptist church. We're, you know, moving on to this so-and-so Baptist church over here. I've seen it with two guys that I went to seminary with. And granted, some of the guys I went to seminary with graduated 2 or 3 years ago. It took me forever to finish. You guys know that. I've talked about it. And it got me thinking today about pastoral turnover and ministerial turnover. Is it healthy for church bodies to be turning over pastors so much? Now, you can look up the Barna survey for, again, quote-unquote senior pastor and their average tenure. And I think it's less than 5 years. But what happens is there has become this career progression, or rungs on a ladder. So if you go back and look at the Bible, which the Bible is bereft of the idea of youth pastor, associate pastor, education pastor. It's just appoint elders in every city. Boom. So you have these local churches and they have elders and there they are. They may or may not be vocational elders. The elders are, you know, they're worthy of double honor. They're worthy of getting paid for the time they spend doing work for the church. Because let's say if you're a blacksmith, for example, in ancient Palestine or in ancient Rome somewhere, and you can make $500 a day as a blacksmith. I don't know what a blacksmith makes, or whatever the ancient equivalent of $500 a day was for being a blacksmith. But 3 days of work, you don't do blacksmithing, but attend a church business. Well, the church needs to try and replace that lost income for you. Right? That's why pastors get paid, because they're doing work for the church, and they could be out earning money otherwise, but they've chosen to devote their time to the Lord's service, the service to the local church, so they need to get paid. All right? Now, somewhere along the line, we've developed the professional pastors and the lay elders, all right? And we've got the staff people. So I talked about the elders before, just the people who are kind of like a board of directors and they don't really get paid for it. But then we've created the second class of elder. We've called them pastors, and now they're senior pastor, associate pastor, education pastor, youth pastor, music minister, and some of them are women, so we call them directors instead of pastors. I've had the show topic before where I said fire the music minister. I won't revisit that. Well, I don't think we need full-time or even part-time music ministers. I will not revisit that, but we have all these jobs which are temporary. I want to put it this way. When I went to the firm, when I got my master's, I left being in the help desk, the IT help desk, and I went to the firm. So I knew I was going to be at the accounting firm, and you go and you're a staff accountant at the accounting firm for 2 years.
And you're either going to get promoted to senior or you're going to not make it. You're going to get drummed out. And then when you get promoted to senior, you're either going to be a senior for 2 years and get promoted to manager, or you're going to get drummed out. And then you're going to either be a manager for the rest of the time or be a partner. But the people who get drummed out, they go to work in accounting elsewhere. So we have, or you have, at a given accounting firm, you've got, say, 30 staff accountants. That's probably a little higher than the firm where I work. It was a big firm. So you got 30 staff accountants, and you know in 2 years, 15 of them are going to be gone, 15 of them are going to go to the next level, and you're going to have 15 more people out of college. Why? Because you don't want to be a staff accountant forever. You want to progress in your earning and progress in your job. So you learn to do your job, and then you move on via a promotion. And then you get, you say that second level, you get seniors or managers. Well, not all of them can be partners of the firm. All right, there's only 10, 15 partners. Not all of them can be partners. Some of them, what they're going to do to progress in their career is go to clients or go outside and start working as controllers. And then they're going to be controllers, and some of them are going to move on to CFO. But you guys, whatever your career is, you know if you have a career job that you move up into different levels of responsibility and income levels as you learn. Now, there's some people out there, like if you're a hairdresser, you're going to be a hairdresser forever. You do the same thing. Or if you're a truck driver, you drive trucks, and that's what you're going to do for 20 years. Some people who work in manufacturing on the floor, they're going to do the same job. There's jobs out there like that, where there's really, you don't get promoted, you just have a skill and you do that same thing over and over, and there's nothing wrong with that. But let me tell you something. These guys aren't going to seminary when they already have a job as youth ministers or as associate pastors, so they can keep being youth ministers and associate pastors and making $20,000 or $30,000 a year. What they do is they get 5 years of experience as a pastor, and then their master's degree, and then they get on sbcjobsearch.net, sbc.net, and they go to the job search, and they look for churches who have openings, and they say, "We are searching for a senior pastor. Must have 5 years of progressive experience." And let me tell you something. The job listings, or not all of them, but some of them, I venture to say most of them, the job advertisements on sbc.net for pastors look a lot like the ones you find on Monster and Indeed and Glassdoor. Right? You think people are looking for a calling, and that's how they spin it. God, this guy's been called. God's called him to leave his old church and come to this one. So please welcome Reverend Jim. He's been 10 years in youth ministry, in middle school youth ministry at Podunk Baptist Church, and he's coming over here to Big Time Baptist Church, and he's going to be the youth pastor over both middle school and high school, and God's just called him here. So he said a tearful goodbye to all the families he was so close to over here, and now we're going to hire him and pay him to be close to us. In fact, we're going to pay him $20,000 more a year because he got all this experience in his MDiv. And I'm seeing this happen with my friends. They're starting to turn over, and they're not staying at the same church that they were. And I think there's this, let me put it this way. The mindset or the idea, it's kind of the pie in the sky idea, is that all these churches are calling people and God is in it and He's directing them to go over here. And we do know biblically the Lord orders people's steps, but that's just not talking about pastors. That's talking about everybody. Everybody. Even accountants and truck drivers. God's in this and God has spoke to this guy to call him over here. Nah, man. He's going over because he wants to make more money. He's got a bigger job. He's put his time and his education in. At Roland Springs, we had the student. Technically, he wasn't a pastor. He was the minister of students and families. And he had come from some church up north where he had, I think, less responsibility. He's from the South. And he finished his MDiv and he got his job at Roland Springs. And he, you know, was working in the youth program and in developing disciple with kids. And then, you know, he got 5 years of experience or so, had another baby, needed more money. Bam, he's gone. He's gone to another church. It's Josh Bice's church. Have fun with that hireling, Josh Bice. We see that all around with a youth pastor. They might be around for 4 or 5 years and then they're gone and here comes another one. And this kind of gets messed up when you're relying on the youth pastor to build your church attendance, get the kids and get their parents and get their parents' money when that's the model. But why has church employment started to mimic the world's employment and its patterns as far as working in a job for 2 or 3 years, getting experience, and moving on to somewhere else? Because if you're at a job and you can't move up, you're going to move on. And eventually you get so senior that you might not move up. Like, I'm pretty much, my career may be over as far as advancement. I'm the plant controller at my plant, and there is no other controller or accountant there. There's me. I am the top accountant there. So there's nowhere for me to go unless I want to move to the corporate office. So I really don't want to move to the corporate office. So here I am. So what am I going to do? I can either stay in my job as a controller, make a lateral move to some other place to be their controller, or make a lateral move to be a corporate controller for somebody else. You know, but the further you advance, the more senior you get, the less opportunities there are. Move up, move out. Or move up, move on. And that's what happens when you get kind of the mid-level office workers or the entry-level workers, when they level up as far as skills and ability to earn, but there's no slots at the organization where they are, they move to a different one. How many times in your life have you seen that at a church? So here's the problem. Who created these levels? 50 years ago or 60 years ago, there wouldn't have been a youth pastor. There was some church member who, you know, had a pool in his backyard and read the Bible a lot, and he was the person who looked after the youth. And he wasn't moving anywhere because he had a job. He worked at the factory. Maybe he would move factories. Maybe he would move up at his factory, but he wasn't leaving the church every time he changed his job. And there was stability in that the church had members who did that. But now we don't use church members, largely, by and large. We hire it out. So what's happened is all these extra-biblical roles have been created of associate pastor, youth pastor, education pastor, music pastor, and because they started to exist, well, now seminary gets bigger. Oh, we're going to train all these people. We'll give them music degrees, education degrees, apologetics degrees. I have. Hey, if anybody knows a church that wants to pay me to sit around and do apologetics all day, let me know, because I'll definitely move, all right? But that I don't really know that that exists, and I'd get fired in a heartbeat. Being an accountant's a pretty good job for me. But you get what I'm saying, I hope, and that the reason you have turnover in the pastoral office, not just staff, the reason your pastoral office turns over so much is because you've patterned the pastoral office, or churches have, after the employment structure of the world. So let me just ask you a question. And anybody who's ever worked at the firm, the accounting firm, knows the answer. Are organizations that have the same employees for a long time stronger or weaker than those who have a lot of turnover? No. A successful organization retains its employees, and the people get expertise and they get to be the best at what they do rather than jumping from here to there. And then the company they incur all these recruiting expenses and training expenses. They're not as effective. And this always came out when you worked in the firm because the client said, you know, we don't want you to send us new staff people every year. So the firm is trying to churn out staff people and have new ones. And the client says, I want the same staff guys. Or at least I want the same senior or the same manager. So a firm that was losing managers and seniors and churning out staff people faster than others looked bad to the clients, because the client said, we want the people who know our business and know how to do our work, because they'll put less hours in. If you keep churning people out, they'll need more hours to do the work, and then you're going to charge us more. So from a client service standpoint, and this is kind of anything in the client service industry, people want to be served by the same employees. If you're a client and the business serving you sends you 10 different servants in 10 different years, you're like, I want to see the same guy. And this, even when you're like, even when you go to a restaurant, we go to the Chuck Wagon for lunch, they changed waitresses. Like, no, that's not our waitress. Our waitress knows what we get. She brings us tea without us asking. She knows when we're about to be done with our tea. We don't even have to order tea. She just brings it. No, we want our waitress. You think about this. Where do you like to go where that's your waiter and he knows you? And he knows the names of your kids. People like that stuff, man. And it makes organizations more successful. But now you got the church. And they're constantly turning over the pastoral staff, but because it comes about jobs and economics. So you might have four pastors at a church, and you might have the senior guy who does the preaching, the education guy, the youth guy, and the music guy. And let's say that they are all stellar. I mean, they're the best music guy, education guy, youth guy, and preaching guy in the whole county, in the whole state. And they just happen to be at the same church. Well, you know what? There's only one senior pastor. And those little three underling guys, they're going to want to go be the man somewhere else. They didn't get called by God to go help these other people. No, they want to be the man. And they want to make the same kind of money that the man makes. And that's why they go. So what's happening is churches are structuring themselves with their paid pastoral staff to be ineffective, to just churn people out and turn over all the time. Wouldn't it be great to just have a group of elders who are all church members, and that's what they did, is manage that church and pastored that church? Wouldn't that be cool? Do you think your church would be more or less effective? And here's the thing. They're all called to that. They're all called to that because that's their local church and God has raised them up to do that. And nobody can ever say, like, you just went to this other church over here to make more money. It'd be the end of level jumpers. So there's probably some happy medium to the being effective. We're in the situation we're in. Professional pastoring is what it is. I've talked about that before. But I want you to analyze that at your church. I want you to just think, what's our pastoral turnover been, and how can we stop it? How can we stop from looking like the world and having all this turnover? And just get people dedicated to this church and not a job, not mercenaries who'll go fight for the next army if they pay him more. Thanks for listening to the Christian Commute. Lord willing, I'll be back with you again tomorrow. Until then, remember, Christianity is not about getting saved. It's about being saved.
Thanks for listening to the Christian Commute. Please send your questions about Christian apologetics and theology to sethdunn88@gmail.com. If you are not a Christian, please remember that you can be reconciled to God through the shed blood of His Son, Jesus Christ. The Bible teaches that all who call on the name of the Lord will be saved. Repent of your sins now and accept Jesus as Lord. God bless.